Now broadcasting the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show, positioning your business with strategies for an extraordinary future. Dr. Nilda features expert guests from diverse backgrounds to bring you their stories and strategies that have helped them reach their success. The diversity in industries gives you that panoramic view from an array of industries. They are innovators, thought leaders, trendsetters, and strategists. Here, Dr. Nilda reveals strategies that will position you to be on the cutting edge and be able to do what you love with the people you like, making the profits you want to live the lifestyle that you have dreamed of. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nilda Perez.
Hello, and welcome back to the Foresight Strategy Show. Today with you is your host, Dr. Nilda Perez, and your co-host, Rachel Calderon. Today we have with us Herb Rubinstein, is the founding member of the board of directors of the Association of Professional Futurists. He advises companies on how to identify future long-term challenges and opportunities. But in addition, he's an attorney. He teaches strategic management and foresight at the Global Energy Management Program of the University of Colorado, Denver's Graduate School of Business. He has authored and co-authored several books and over 100 articles on business and futurist topics. So welcome with me, Herb Rubinstein.
So welcome, Herb. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
Great. I'm really super excited to have you here and all of the information that you bring. I know you do business futuring, as do I. So here's my first question. Can you please tell us a little bit about what futures do to try to figure out, I guess, future events?
Well, it's even more than future events. We really like to look at what are not only just the trends, but what are the small signals that are coming out from different events that are going to lead to major changes. If we're trying to predict small changes, well, that's not going to make much of a difference in the world. So what are the big changes? So 25 years ago, it was pretty easy to predict driverless vehicles. Pretty hard to figure out when they will actually hit the road, but they're starting to hit the road already. But those of us in the futurist business knew they were coming because we understood why they were coming.
Exactly. So a lot of our audience is, they're all business people, but not very many understand the whole concept of futures. So can you explain futures a little bit more in detail?
Sure. It is an organized set of methodologies, research tools, analytical tools, and of course, writing and presentation tools. Because even if you understand the future, if you can't explain it in a believable way, if you cannot write about it, if you cannot stand up and make a presentation, if you cannot have graphics and PowerPoint slides and other things that look right, you simply are not going to be effective. Because our job is really to warn people about what the future, what many futures could be, because nobody can predict exactly which future is going to take place. But we can pretty much narrow it down sometimes to 3 or 4 or 5 scenarios that could happen. So for example, with the Arab Spring about 10 years ago, all one really needed to know was that in the whole history of the Middle East for 5,000 years, Arab and Jewish leaders almost never last longer than 40 years.
Right.
Well, all the leaders were in their 40th, 41st, 42nd, 43rd year. And there are cycles in society, so you have to know those cycles. But very often we break through those cycles. And understanding the impact, I remember, I think it was in 2002, understanding exactly the power of Facebook before it was even a company.
Right.
I went to school with Zuckerberg, and so they got to use a beta version of it. And it completely transformed an event in terms of what people did in real time during that event. So all of a sudden you just knew 15 years before it got big exactly how it was going to impact society. And
right.
The energy sector, which is where I teach, there are a lot of exciting things going on in the energy sector that a futurist can glean onto that people in the industry just won't see because they're every day trying to make payroll. They're every day trying to keep people from being injured. They're every day trying to reduce their carbon footprint, or at least I hope so.
Right.
But when those of us who get to sit back and look at what trends and what has happened in the past, we can see things that probably or likely or might happen that are otherwise going to catch people blindsided.
Right, right. And that's what I always tell businesses, that it's really important that they see this, and that they're constantly looking at the future, looking at trends, looking at the things that can impact their business. Because pretty much like you say, most businesses are very focused on operations, and that's great and it has its place. But taking the time to narrow things down, to look at futures, to look at how these trends and how, or, you know, even across industries, what are the things that can impact your business, is just as important as operations. Would you agree?
It's in the long run, obviously more important than operations. And I'll give you an example. The price of natural gas at one time was about $12.47 per MMBTU. And that's a measure everybody uses. Now it's in the $2.50 range. However, in some parts of the United States, the price may actually in the next year go negative. That is, if you're getting natural gas out of the ground and you want somebody to store it, or you want to send it in some pipes, you're going to have to pay. So the price will get down very low, and it could be below zero. People don't often think of zero price or below zero price. And so it's a very complicated process. But we know, for example, we've had large tax cuts. And I inform our students and I teach people, there's really a futurist would look at this from a process point of view, not a political point of view.
Right.
So when you say no new taxes, from a process point of view, okay, maybe there's going to be no new taxes. However, there are going to be more regulations, because taxes is when the government takes money from companies and they fix a problem, or they spend money on the problem. Maybe they fix it and maybe they don't. If the government doesn't have any money, they just create regulations and they tell the companies to fix the problems and they force them to do it and spend their own money.
Right.
And so now we're in an unusual situation of tax cuts or no new taxes and trying to cut back regulations. That for the long run is not sustainable, because problems will crop up. The citizenry will demand more action. And I've written a book called Leadership Development for Educators. It was pretty hard to predict that teachers were going to start going out on strike. However, once you start to see over the last 20 years, education budgets are cut.
Right.
And no one speaks for teachers anymore, as
right.
well as the teachers themselves. Sure, one party might speak for a teacher or a union or something like that, but students can't speak for education very well. They have no voice. They're getting more of a voice with Parkland. So we can predict student involvement to increase in the United States. We can predict teacher involvement, because the budgets have been cut for 20 years. And eventually, when you cut budgets, you will eventually cut quality. And when you right. cut qualities, somebody's not going to stand for it in this great nation.
Awesome.
Dr. Nilda was just saying about how we as businesses need not focus so much on operations and focus more on future opportunities and threats and things like that. But how can we bring it home? Like, because in a sense, we all have... aren't we all like futurists? Maybe not think exactly alike, but aren't we kind of all in a way futurists? And how can we bring how we think in the future as a normal mundane person into the business world, so that we can all kind of work together? Is that like even possible? Because I usually thought of the future as, okay, I want to have a 401k. This is like my personal, but now when I stepped into the business side of things, I had to think like what Dr. Nilda was saying, look at the political aspects. Look at now, just switch that same idea, but just switch it over. So can you give them also kind of like examples of how they can kind of bring it together so that they can benefit from this? Because I want the audience to benefit.
Sure. When one is thinking about their own career, one 30 years ago, probably not a good idea to become an IBM Selectric II typewriter repair person.
Yeah.
My law firm was the first law firm in Washington, D.C. in 1984, where every lawyer and every staff member had a computer on his or her desk. I was able to compete with the largest law firms in the United States because I was getting daily feeds from Westlaw and Lexis and these highly expensive computerized systems that taught me what the recent cases were. Right. So access to the best information about what the future is. People want to publish about the future because they want to influence the future. Okay. And so when it comes to a career, 10 years ago, I would have been recommending much more that people go into the practice of law. I would still recommend that, but only in intellectual property areas and in other future-oriented areas.
Right.
What if you're in the personal injury, people get hit in car accidents. I'm not going to say there'll be no personal injuries in 2030 or 2040, but with driverless vehicles, not many lawyers are going to make a living.
Right.
You've got to get out of that field right away.
Right.
You never want to be the last in any industry.
Right.
And so you always want to help. Every individual should try to help build an industry or build not just the company they work for, but build the whole sector and speak about the future. By the way, I predicted oil prices would go down like natural gas prices, and they've come up. And they've come up for a lot of reasons. And it's very useful when you make a prediction or even a forecast to be wrong, as long as you present it to people who are smarter than you, know more about this, because it starts a conversation. So the key for every individual in business or in their personal life is to have a conversation about, well, I would say 2020, but that's right around the corner.
Right.
So having a conversation about what things look like in 2025.
Right.
I mean, but there's one area that I don't think any futurist can make any sense on today, and that's ethics. It was the Oxford English Dictionary that said post-truth was their word of the year in last year, I believe, or might have even been 2017. I don't know what the future of ethics will bring. It seems like less emphasis on ethics. However, 25 years ago, one could have predicted that sexual harassment, treating women unequally, will bring down companies. And Nike's a good example. Executives are getting kicked out. But way before that, there was a company, and based on some research, I'm not sure I have the whole story, but it was pretty clear Yahoo, even when it got a female CEO, was not a good place for women to work. And Yahoo at one time was valued at $127 billion, and it sold for $3 billion. Mm. So I don't know how you lose $125 billion of value, but I think in this world, if you don't treat women fairly, if you don't pay them equal wages, if you cut off telecommuting, I think you can destroy a lot of value.
Right.
And that's what businesses cannot afford to do. Volkswagen's the best example. They have a $50 billion mistake with this defeat software. Any futurist could have predicted they were dead in the water when they first came up with this idea.
Right. But I think that having these conversations, like you said, although they sometimes, you know, you were probably wrong in one area, I think that you also got their brain thinking as to, you know what, let's try to prevent what we think could happen.
Right.
So I think these conversations are very important.
Well, also to take that a step further, the other thing is that we have to look at when we make predictions, that we also have a quadrant of futures. There are several possible futures. We never predict one solitary thing. So we have several different futures that we can look at, and then from there, choose which ones are the most likely to happen.
And here's a good example. I've had the privilege of spending a lot of time in London. In London, there are now small streets where cars used to be crammed in, and cars are not even allowed on those streets anymore. There's a congestion pricing tax. And here in New York, we've been fighting with a congestion pricing tax. Many people have wanted it. You're only averaging 6 miles an hour driving through Manhattan. You right. can almost walk that quickly.
Right.
From one end of Manhattan to the other. Singapore, and I believe it's just to get a car licensed, just to get your license plate, is $13,000. So we know through economics, when you raise the price of something, there's sometimes what's called an elastic demand, and therefore people will use less of it.
Right.
So New York struggled because its subways are filled, so they can't pour more people into the subways. They're starting to use more ferries. So we're in a situation where traffic and pollution are starting to have huge detrimental impacts. And in New Delhi, they have to close schools. Futurists often figure out when something happens in one place, it will spread or it won't.
Right.
And futurists just have to be hyper aware of what's going on all around the world. And that's the fun part of being a futurist.
Right, right. Absolutely. I'm going back a couple of steps. I was probably one of those people because I used to be an administrative assistant, and I came into the, so I really believe that I've been a futurist like all my life. But in the 1980s, I started learning computers, and I was one of the few people who took the chance and wanted to learn. And I used to work in law firms. So
here's an example. As a futurist, I predict that someday women will be allowed to drive cars. Now you can say, well, wait a minute. Women have been driving cars for 100 years.
There we go.
And I say, but not in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
And so the issue is when a trend becomes ubiquitous around the world, what is the tipping point and how do we see it in advance? So women are slowly starting to get the right to drive cars in Saudi Arabia. And so I urge everyone to be looking all around the world about what's going on, whether someone's a political enemy or not. I once had a student write a paper on the future of natural gas vehicles. He got an F and was told to rewrite. This was 10 years ago. He did not include the one country 10 years ago that had the most number of natural gas vehicles. That happened to be Iran. I don't care if you're going to about Iran's politics one way or another in some respects. But my point is, as a futurist, if you're going to write a paper on the future of an industry and you're not going to include a discussion of the country that's already ahead of everybody else,
right.
you deserve an F.
Right.
So you have to be very broad in your scope of thinking. You know, what are future voting participation levels going to be in the United States?
Right.
If they rise 10%, which I think they will, especially with young people who ages 18 to 29 just don't vote very much. If they right. start voting equal to the national average, things change.
Right.
Hispanics in Texas, things change. So a lot of times you're looking for a trend inside a trend.
Right. So futurists talk a lot about stakeholders. Can you explain what stakeholders are in futuring and why they're important to even try to figure out?
Sure. Stakeholders are people that if something happens, they either win big or they lose big.
Right.
Now, in America, we often think, well, stakeholders are the people who win if you win. So you take, for example, the price of autonomous vehicles. Who's going to win if they're autonomous vehicles? Older people who've already had the keys to their car taken away by their kids.
Oh, right.
The military is going to win. Fewer deaths on the battlefield. safety. We're not going to be killing 40,000 people a year on the road.
Right.
But who's going to lose? The courts are going to lose. What happened to traffic court? All those jobs are gone. What happened to DWI and all those bail bondsmen? DWI is gone.
Right.
What happened to all the driving schools? They're gone. So there are stakeholders. So stakeholders have an economic or social or political or philosophical investment, mm-hmm. either for something or against something. And believe it or not, most people get this wrong. They think, well, all the proponents who are for something because they will win, those are the people who are going to propel it to work forward. So the military will propel driverless vehicles, AARP and older folks. What about insurance companies? Insurance companies are going to have to reinvent themselves because the car insurance business isn't going to look very good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. However, Americans hate to lose more than they love to win.
Okay.
So a lot of times you will get people fighting against pipelines because they for oil. They think they're going to lose because if you don't put them on pipelines, you're going to do it just the same way you did in the 1850s and 60s and 70s with the beginning of oil. It all was transported on rail cars. Well, rail cars blow up, pipelines usually don't. But if you think, I don't want a pipeline through my backyard, I don't live near a rail track, it'll blow up in somebody else's town or city. One of the things that futurists have to do is understand these groups because they're individually powerful. And with the internet and with Facebook, I can get 20,000 people to some place where 10 years ago, I never could have gotten them. I mean, the hard work we did to create the National Park Service in the United States, people were still writing letters to each other. Go talk to your congressman. Today, we could just have 50,000 people show up at a national monument that somebody wants to decommission.
Right.
So life's gotten much quicker.
Okay. So I have one last question, and that one is regarding scenarios. First, I would like you to explain scenarios, and then I would like you to explain why it's important to companies to spend time, money, to understand future scenarios that will affect or impact their business.
Good. So a scenario is an integrated story about how life will unfold. Right. So if I was in Nike 10 years ago, I would have cared. Are women getting paid the same amount? Are women getting promoted? And I would have made sure, because every organization has a simple choice to make in their culture. They can have a we culture, all of us together,
right,
or us and them. And if it's us and them, men versus women, inside your company, you will go down.
Right.
That scenario is now pretty clear. It's playing out over and over. And if you have a we culture, then I'm going to pay men and women the same because for the same job because we're all we. So for every company in their culture, life's the choice is simple. Us and them or we.
Right.
And a futurist is going to say, us and them is a failed strategy. We is a successful strategy. So understanding the strategic impacts in a scenario like that are very important.
Right. I believe that that's probably why a lot of companies such as Zappos, are opting now for a not such a top-heavy, a flat organization. Not so top-heavy because, again, this is where there's so much waste. They have all these managers, and they're not really that effective. So companies are now opting more to have flat organizations where everybody is responsible for themselves and everybody's responsible for what they, what they bring to the table, and not so many managers and leaders, so to speak.
Right. So if you improve the educational sector, you end up with flat organizations. Because you don't need as many managers making all the decisions. Managers become leaders of leaders instead of leaders of followers. So that's why the educational system drives everything 20 years in advance. And that's why there's this huge fight by teachers over the educational system today.
Right. Okay. All right. Makes sense. So, Herb, I want to thank you so much for your participation here. We understand that you will probably have a ton more information, so we would definitely love to have you back. But we want to thank you for taking the time to spend with us today, and we look forward to having you back soon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for your
okay.
questions.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for listening to the Foresight Strategy Show. You can hear host Dr. Nilda, co-host Rachel with featured guests every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live or anytime on demand. Visit www.drnildaperez.com/show. For more information, sign up to our Foresight Strategies Insider newsletter, a $10 value for free at www.drnildaperez.com/newsletter.